basically like really emotional about it all, because he does all IRL streaming. And so I can't imagine, like, if this is your full-time career and you've built this platform for years and years and years and you have memories of viewers, just wiping it all out. I think I saw a lot of streamers talk about this, just the feeling of losing all of that emotional story. That's pretty rough.
Welcome back once again to the Gaming Careers Podcast. It has been a little while. Obviously, the last episode I think I uploaded was actually in March before 2020 took its toll and the whole COVID pandemic has kind of ruined things. We've obviously taken a bit of a break. Some guests had to pull out and we've had a bit of a rethink about how to run this podcast. But it is back and it's back in a slightly new format. I've actually got a co-host now. So welcome to the podcast, Benjamin Green, who is joining us from across the pond. Hi, Ben. How you doing?
Good, man. Glad to be here. I'm really excited for this. Thanks for having me on. Excited for the future of the show.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to be able to discuss more like streamer news topics that's coming out. There's obviously a lot coming out at the moment. I particularly want to talk today about the Twitch DMCA things, but it's going to be handy having somebody that's so involved in the industry and has good knowledge all around. So why don't we jump straight into the Twitch DMCA stuff? It feels like that's coming up every single week now. I made a video on it probably 2 months ago, but it still seems to be relevant as ever because streamers still are streaming with copyright music, and it seems like the RIAA, I think it is the acronym, they're pretty keen to get their hands on some of the money.
Yeah, I think we're really in the midst of it right now. It feels like every day there's a new story coming out about somebody. I think we had our first ever actual account termination from the DMCA stuff yesterday, which hadn't happened to my knowledge yet, although that's been since reversed, so I'm not sure exactly what's happening there, but yeah, the strikes are definitely getting more serious now. There's been a lot of streamers affected by this, especially the top level. So it's you can't mess around with that anymore. I mean, it's getting pretty serious with how much they're cracking down on that stuff.
I think the one thing that really has come up in the past week from my point of view is the mass email that they seem to send out. Because before now, it's sort of been some big streamers that have received an email about a copyright strike. But there seem to be hundreds, if not thousands, of streamers hit by this email warning them about some copyrighted content in the past that they've removed from their channel. And now you've got plenty of the big streamers weighing in with their opinions about deleting 7 years of VODs and clips, you know, the whole history of their streaming career. And, you know, this day was always going to come, or this timeline was always going to come where the record labels eventually found out about Twitch, found out about streaming. And you know, rightfully so, they're wanting some of the piece of the pie from music that's been streamed there. You can complain as much as you want at Twitch, and Twitch have definitely made some mistakes that we'll get onto in this whole system, because YouTube went through this whole same process maybe 8 years ago and now probably have one of the best identification systems and the most understood rule bases for people that are creating content on YouTube. So it's now Twitch's turn.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like we kind of pretended it wasn't happening for a while on Twitch. A lot of people just kind of ignored it because it wasn't actually being enforced. But yeah, it was pretty much inevitable at some point this was going to happen. I do think there's a lot of conversation about whether this is sort of archaic at this point and the music industry needs to catch up. But regardless, they definitely have the rights to do this kind of thing. So I don't know. It's definitely unfortunate that's affecting a lot of people so suddenly and they're getting a bunch of strikes all at once. But I mean, it had to come about one way or the other eventually. So I on my side, again, I've definitely had my share of copyright music in the past I've used on different channels and things, but I definitely have moved completely the other direction lately with everything happening. Like, you really cannot take chances. And there are some decent ways out there to find copyright free music. I hope there'll be more in the future as we get more of this stuff, but yeah, I would definitely encourage anyone listening not to mess around with this anymore, because at this point, the warnings are over. It's actually coming and the takedowns are happening.
I think what surprised me the most from like the outside perspective, because I think a lot of people that are in the know have seen this coming for a long time. And the thing that surprised me really is what Twitch has done. They've obviously tried to prepare their streamers with the information about it all, but they haven't really implemented a great system for users to be able to deal with this 7-10 years of backlogged clips. Because right now, really, the only choice, and the choice that a lot of big streamers are making, is that they're deleting all of their work. And, you know, there's not even a way to make things unlisted or private, you know, just to buy yourself some time. You literally have 2 or 3 days to delete all of these clips. You're never going to be able to go through 7 years of clips or 7 years of VODs to try and find the infringing content. Your real only choice is to delete everything. And it would have been nice for them to at least have implemented some kind of time saver where you could make clips private, at least so they weren't public to the internet. And you could actually find the copyright infringing content and then remove that. But it's I think that's the poor lack of understanding from Twitch's point of view about how quickly this would hit all of their customers and all their streamers.
Yeah, and they didn't really have tools ready at the time they needed them, because a lot of initially, I think they have some tools now where you can mass delete that kind of thing, but initially there was no way besides manually going through each clip and deleting it. So there were a couple of community solutions that came out for that, which was thankful for a lot of people. If they hadn't had that, might have gotten more copyright strikes. But yeah, I mean, there's just not a great solution for, like on YouTube, you can just hide stuff, make it hidden, unlisted. There's no option for that at all on Twitch. And for a lot of people, it's tough to delete 7, 10+ years of content on the platform.
I mean, that's the history of your career.
Yeah, exactly. I heard an interview with Jacob Bake, who was one of the ones affected by this. And he was saying just basically like really emotional about it all, because he does all IRL streaming. And so I can't imagine, like, if this is your full-time career and you've built this platform for years and years and years and you have memories with viewers, just wiping it all out. I think I saw a lot of streamers talk about this, just the feeling of losing all of that emotional story. That's pretty rough. And some people at least are moving stuff to YouTube slowly. But yeah, it still sucks to lose like the chat VOD experience and just having it all in one place for people. So it's tough, man.
Yeah, and Twitch haven't been doing absolutely nothing. They have introduced this new Twitch soundtrack feature. Have you checked that out at all?
Yes, I have. I actually have been messing with that the last couple of days. Have you tried it out yet?
I've not tried it out. I've just sort of looked at how it gets implemented and what the library looks like.
I think it has potential. I think people kind of were very fast to say this is great or this is really bad. I don't think it's either of those. I think it feels very much like a Spotify clone for the app itself, but it's really limited right now. The best part of the app is it's all DMCA free music, right? That's the whole reason you should be using it at this point, because you'll be fine. But it's pretty limited. Like, you have 5 or 6 playlists you can choose from: lo-fi, electronic, dance, and just kind of plays through music on the library. But you can't search for any stuff you want to find. You can't add stuff to a playlist. You can like music, but that doesn't seem to actually do anything. Like, you can't go back and listen to your liked songs. So, I mean, if you're the kind of person like me who likes to really kind of create your own playlists and build your own library of stuff that you find, there's really no support for that at all right now, unfortunately. But I mean, if you're just looking for something safe, it's pretty easy. And I think the integration on Twitch is cool, where people can kind of see, you know, add to their playlist for their music choice of the platform of choice. But it's pretty limited. I think it'd be cool if they add things like the viewer being able to tweak the volume for the music track on top of there. And it did delete it from my VOD, which is kind of interesting to go back and listen to it without the VOD, without the music, I mean. So it's cool. I think it could get there, but it's definitely a beta program right now. I could see that for sure.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that implementation, because that's quite a cool way of doing it, I think. Rather than them just going the route of buying the rights to loads of DMCA copyright-free music that people can stream with, they actually want to implement it in a way where you send your stream, and in a separate audio track, effectively, you're sending your Twitch soundtrack music. So that all gets put together for your stream. So people that are watching your live stream live, they hear that music in the background as well. But when it actually comes to saving that stream into a VOD, or when you want to download that VOD afterwards, it doesn't have the music in it, which is the difference there. They've clearly agreed with all the partners that they partnered with for the music that music is for live streaming, for live content, and not for video on demand content that comes afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. It's a separate license, I guess, to actually have the live stream music when you're live versus having it somewhere in a VOD. It does make it kind of nice if you're the person who wants to put stuff on YouTube too, to have that automatic. I mean, you could always kind of do that through voice meter and programs like that, but it was kind of convoluted. So that is a nice option if you want to be able to take your highlights and put them on YouTube and cut them up without the music. But yeah, I mean, there's actually a decent library on there too of songs. I think, like, I'm a big fan of the chill hop artist kind of stuff, and they have a lot of good stuff there. Monster Cat's on there. I think even like Porter Robinson is on there. But the problem is it's mixed in with a lot of other stuff and you can't filter it at all. So sometimes you're getting really good stuff and then it moves to the next song and you're like, what in the world am I listening to? I need to change this ASAP. So yeah, I mean, I think, again, it has potential, and the VOD muting portion is super nice for people who have never been able to figure it out, and myself included. It's just nice to have it one click, and there's very little setup required there.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's going to be a use case, especially for newer streamers that want a simple setup where they're going to be able to add in music really easily. But it sounds like from your experience, there definitely needs to be a larger library, as well as some pretty basic features like being able to save songs to a playlist so that you can skip all the garbage and just make sure you're listening to what you want to listen to. But I mean, it's worth noting at this point, there are dozens now of services, both free and paid, where you can find DMCA safe or copyright free music, whichever search term you want to use. Places like No Copyright Sounds, Harris Heller's Stream Beats, Pretzel Rocks, Monster Cat, Epidemic Sound. I will leave linked in the show notes to this podcast the video that I did for the Gaming Careers YouTube channel about DMCA on Twitch, where I cover what's going on and how to download and save your clips before deleting them, as well as these alternative methods for choosing the music that you want to play along to. A small plug there just to get me some more views. No, but it is still a relevant video, I promise. But I just think this topic is probably going to keep going on for months and months, and probably over the next 6 months to a year, we're going to see some of the really big streamers that are choosing to ignore what is effectively the law get banned, or even worse, probably get sued by RIAA, because they're probably going to make an example out of somebody, and I feel sorry for whoever that person is, but it's probably one of the people that are outwardly saying that it's not going to affect them and they don't need to worry about it, and they'll never stop playing top 20 songs on their live streams.
Yeah, there are definitely a couple of creators who think they're above the law, sort of. Like, it's they've talked to somebody who knows something that the others don't. And that's a dangerous game to play, in my opinion. Like, maybe you have some confidence there, and maybe you have the money to go against RIAA. I doubt it, maybe. But yeah, I am also kind of worried about, you know, if streamers actually start getting straight up their accounts fully terminated. Again, we almost had the first case of that yesterday, but it seems like it didn't go through. And it's not clear if, like, Twitch helped resolve that or what happened there. But I do think that, just because people are people, there's going to be some people that get banned for this stuff or completely terminated from their accounts from copyright strikes. I mean, it happens on YouTube still, even with the new system, so it's going to happen on Twitch. The question is just who it happens to, and then kind of like what the outrage looks like after that happens, and maybe we'll see changes, but I kind of doubt it for the short term. Hopefully long term it'll be more of a working together with the music industry and not like this tug and pull with Twitch and other services like that.
Yeah, it would definitely be nice if it got to the same sort of agreement that YouTube's got with the music industry, where it's beneficial to both parties. So the YouTube system's actually pretty good now. I know people still complain about it, but it's probably the best identification system in terms of where you upload content. It's really smart. It finds the infringing content actually even before you publish the video sometimes, and you can quite easily mute that portion or even remove that portion using YouTube's built-in video editor. So that they're trying their best to help creators avoid this issue, but even if it stays up and you still have infringing content, they allow you to keep the video up, and just the monetary value that video creates through advertising goes to the record label instead. So they're trying their best, and I think they have the best system, but that was something they probably have had to work 4 or 5 years on and continue to work on every single day. And it feels like Twitch should have started that 3 or 4 years ago when they saw how big the live streaming industry was going to get, and really they could see this problem coming from a while away.
Yeah, it's just kind of growing pains, I guess, because YouTube's been along for a bit longer than Twitch has. But yeah, I mean, realistically, they should have been able to look at YouTube and say, okay, they had this problem, they had to invest to fix it, we're going to have to do the same thing. And I guess Twitch Studio is part of that, but that's not going to be nearly enough to actually identify copyrighted music and provide a decent solution for people instead of just saying, delete everything, get rid of it all. Hopefully we'll see some tools like that. I would love if they have, similar to YouTube, they can identify the content and credit the artists, or like link out the stuff, even like demonetization of a kind, even with like subs and bits maybe. I don't know, there's a lot of things they could do there, but it definitely could take some inspiration from YouTube.
They've obviously got something in place, because there is a system where your VODs get muted in portions when it detects some kind of copyright-free music. It's definitely not as advanced as YouTube's system, but they clearly have something. Whether they've outsourced that or they built it themselves, I'm sure we could find that with a little bit more digging. But I mean, the biggest case is you're seeing these big streamers from you know, bands and artists who are now streaming on Twitch, because this platform is getting more and more popular. So you're getting more and more mainstream celebrities coming across. And I don't know if you saw this week, but the Dragon Force lead guitarist, Herman Lee, was banned from Twitch. And we don't know for certain if it's for DMCA stuff, but there's a lot of speculation that it's because he's played his own band's music on his stream. And that has automatically been flagged, giving him a warning or a temporary ban. So he had to move over to YouTube temporarily.
Yeah, this one's interesting because he was one of the artists who specifically kind of put out some notice about, hey guys, all my stuff is safe on Twitch. I've seen a couple artists do this who say, guys, it's all clear, don't worry about it. The issue is there's no actual license being given. It's just like written permission. And sometimes the rights are in the, most times, are in the publisher or the record label as opposed to the individual artist to grant those things. And again, we don't know if this was actually from DMCA. It seems like there was something else that might have happened on his stream. But yeah, this was a case where he actually got banned for that. So it could be an example of someone who didn't really have the rights to give getting smacked for that. But I have seen a lot of other artists that feel this frustration too. Even like Logic and Zed have both come out and said like, hey, I want people to use my music, but they can't. Like even my own music, I sometimes can't listen to on my stream, which is kind of crazy to think about just because of publishers.
It's such a crazy situation that you've written music yourself and you can't use that in your own live streams. And it's a lot of these younger artists that I think understand the value of what is effectively promotion of music. It's a difficult balance, isn't it? Because if you're a tiny artist and somebody says, oh, I want to use your music and I'll pay you through promotion, you're probably going to say, no, that's not fair. But at the same time, like, you can see the argument of, you know, if one of these large streamers helped with the launch of an album, like, you could see that being incredibly popular. And we look at how that's worked in the game industry when games like Apex Legends launched and they paid big streamers to play that game. It was incredibly popular. And so... And music's just a different form of media to a game. So maybe there is going to be some like balance found when the record labels eventually catch up to how popular live streaming is. But for now, it seems to be that we're fighting it from different angles.
Yeah, I think I really hope they work closely more together in the future. I mean, even Twitch has been kind of pushing music lately. They have the whole new tab at the top of Twitch just for music. And over quarantine, there's been a ton of music artists coming out to Twitch. A lot of my favorite artists are doing like DJ sets and even like music production streams on Twitch. But then there's the copyright issues of doing that with their own music, which is kind of crazy to think about. So I really do hope we have a better solution here. And in terms of like getting publicity for smaller artists, I do think Twitch is a great way to do that. We just have to find a good way that's not, you know, exposure for big artists that don't need it versus smaller artists who could use it and like would more value that kind of thing from people.
Well, maybe this ties in with the next topic that we could talk about, because we're talking about mainstream celebrities coming over to Twitch. Did you manage to catch the AOC stream? I think we recorded over 400,000 people watching her first stream on Twitch, playing Among Us, obviously with some very popular Twitch streamers, which is going to help boost the numbers, but still absolutely staggering number of people to watch your first stream of Twitch. That's like, there's no path to affiliate or path to partner when your first stream hits over 400,000 people.
Yeah, it's that's a crazy number. And I think it was a lot of things coming together. I did see a little bit of it. I go to bed pretty early, so it was pretty late for me, but... yeah, I think it was just a mix of really perfect timing and the perfect person coming over to do this with the election coming up and a lot of huge streamers involved in the co-stream plus Among Us, which is a popular game. So it's kind of like a perfect storm for this kind of thing to happen. And I personally don't think you'd see this happen with other politicians quite so much, and especially after the election and everything. But it was definitely cool to see. I think this was in the top couple streams ever on Twitch from an individual person. I think like the top 10, maybe even top 5. So it's a big event. And I do think we'll see other politicians at least try and do this thing in the future.
Yeah, we saw, I can't remember her name, but the New Zealand Prime Minister, I don't know if you caught that Twitch clip. So she jumped on a famous New Zealand streamer who I think's name is Brox or something like that, Broxer. He's a famous woodworking Twitch streamer who's been heavily praised for how... humble he is on stream, basically doing woodwork. And she came to visit him whilst he was streaming. It was an amazing moment. But you're definitely going to see some of these younger politicians using Twitch, platforms like Twitch and YouTube to be able to put their political stance forward. And I mean, maybe that's the sign of the times. It kind of ties in with the music industries as well. Twitch is just becoming so mainstream now that mainstream celebrities, politicians are going to start to utilize it, similar to how Twitter was utilized for politics, you know, in 10 years ago, 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think you can ignore it at this point with Twitch. And this is kind of the perfect case study of it working well and it being authentic. As long as, you know, brands or celebrities or politicians, anyone can actually engage authentically with Twitch or other services, then I feel like this is a much better solution, which we might jump into with some of the ad stuff happening lately. It's a lot better to kind of do this thing than just plaster people with ads about a political campaign or a brand, and really kind of speak directly to people instead of at them.
Yeah, one really cool thing that I saw from the whole AOC stuff was there was a guy who made some graphics for her in a YouTube video, I think only about 48 hours before she went live streaming. And he had no contact with her. He just made a YouTube video where he was like, today I'm going to try and create some graphics for AOC's stream. And he took some of the pictures from her website and the brand colors and her logo and all these kind of things, and just made some Twitch panels to go below her Twitch stream, but had no intention of ever reaching out or anything. But then when she actually went live, she was using these Twitch panels. So she or someone in her team had found this YouTube video, contacted the guy, got the panels, used them on her stream. And I just think like that's so awesome to see people in the community being like supported. I don't know if he got any financial incentive out of it or if it was just something that he did for free, but I thought it was really cool that they're so down to earth that they're even, you know, reaching out to the community to see what people are creating and talking about. So that was really cool. And you always want to see these small creators being supported in some way.
Yeah, that's super cool. I didn't hear about that. But again, it's a great example of some of these bigger figures coming in and not just speaking at people, but engaging with them and actually working with the viewers and people in the community. So that's awesome. And I hope we keep seeing more of that for sure.
Let's move on to talking a little bit about something that came up just in the last couple of days, actually, which was Pokimane setting her donation limit to $5, and not in the way that you might think, actually as the upper limit of her donation. So you can now no longer donate more than $5 to Pokimane. She's obviously an incredibly popular streamer, you know, talking the very, very top percentages of the platform. And she sort of did the Twitch clip that went viral with this announcement was her saying that basically, you know, she really appreciated all the support through college and university, and when, you know, it was a bit of a hustle for her, but now she's doing incredibly well. She's got clothing lines, makeup lines, she's getting sponsorships. She's got, I think, over 20 million followers on all the different platforms. So she's doing very well, and she doesn't want people donating more than $5 anymore. What do you think about that when you see something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a pretty cool thing to do for your stream if you've kind of decided that, you know, you're in a place where you really don't need the people going crazy with donations. She didn't turn them off completely, but she, you know, she made it much harder for people to donate a lot of money at once, which kind of goes, I don't know if you saw the other clip, but she had talked before about people should stop donating so much to top streamers and just kind of, you know, work with people and give that to smaller creators and things like that. So it's cool to see her do something like this to actually kind of put her words into action almost and let people know that, yeah, she actually go put this somewhere else. Like, you can still donate to me a little bit if you want to, but those big incentives should go to rising creators who are in my spot 5 years ago, right? Who can kind of get to that level and keep growing. And I think there's actually been a lot of this lately in terms of supporting smaller creators that I've seen from some top streamers. So I hope that trend continues, because I feel like that's something that's been newer, even though Twitch has been going for a while now. So yeah, I definitely hope we see top creators kind of bringing new creators into the spotlight and keeping the trend going on Twitch and sharing the wealth, kind of.
I think she's a shining example of the right way to have done it as well. She's clearly quite business savvy. I know there's the whole meme about her being the savvy businesswoman, but she has definitely utilized her popularity and been able to probably bring a lot of value into brand campaigns and all these kind of things. And like I said, clothing lines and advertising that she does on Instagram and YouTube and places like that. And then she doesn't need the money as much from big donations. So I thought it was a really nice message that she shared. And I've seen a couple of streamers now following her. And I think she actually had to work with Streamlabs to build this feature, as in Streamlabs had never built the option to limit how much people are donating to you. And now a few streamers that are also using Streamlabs as their donation platform have followed her. Nightblue3 is the one that I saw. But yeah, I think it's awesome that she's thought of that and limiting donations from people. But I've never really understood that mindset of donating large amounts of money to a millionaire anyway, so but it's cool to see.
Yeah, definitely agree, and I think we'll see maybe some more other streamers keep doing this. I've seen some in the past who have turned off donations completely, so some could do that as well. I think Disguised Toast was the one who did that famously in the past. So again, just a cool example of top streamers saying, hey guys, I've got enough, give it to other people. I'll keep bringing you the content, but you don't need to support me with so much as you have in the past.
So let's go from a good opinion about streaming from Pokimane to the, I can't remember exactly what role he is for Google Stadia. So I'll have to, creative director apparently is what he is. So he has the opinion that streamers should be paying to play the games that they're streaming, which obviously didn't go great down very well with the streaming community. And plenty of people pointed out games that have been incredibly successful because of streamers. I mean, Among Us is the prime example right now where everybody seems to be playing it. And I think it was three devs that worked on it. They stopped working on it 2 or 3 years ago because they had a peak player count of about 100 over the release of the game. And then it's been picked up recently by streamers. I think it was Soda Poppin that played it first and sort of got a lot of Twitch streamers onto it. And now it's one of the most played games on Steam, and the developers are back working on it, making custom maps and all these kind of things. So I guess let's discuss this argument of streamers should be paying the developers of games to be able to play the games on stream. What do you think?
Yeah, this one has been, I want to say divisive, but really it's pretty much everyone agrees what they think about this. I do want to say quickly, he's not the creative director for Stadia overall. It's for one of the studios at Stadia. That was one of the big confusion pieces from people. But yeah, still, I mean, the opinion, I think he's kind of walked it back a little bit. Basically, you can't deny that sites like Twitch, especially Twitch these days, just have a huge effect on the popularity of games. I mean, you go through the browse directory of Twitch, and that's sort of, at this point, a gauge of the popularity of games. And yeah, Among Us is the perfect example of how Twitch can just blow up certain games that haven't even been played for years, or, you know, just out of nowhere can spike. I think Fall Guys was another kind of good example with how that just got super popular on Twitch for a bit. So yeah, I think while he's technically right, you probably, just like music, like we talked about, you should have rights to stream a game, and there's some debate as to whether that's inherent when you buy the game or not. Realistically, that's not a very good message to send to the streaming community, to say like, hey guys, you need to pay me on top of the game you already bought to stream the game so that we get more attention. And it's a bit more nuanced than that, but I think that's sort of the feel that people got. So yeah, I don't think this is sort of like music, right? Like this isn't, while it's technically true, it's not a very good stance to set for the future of the relationship between these industries. And it's not going to make your title or your publisher or any of that very popular with the community.
Yeah, I think one thing that I found interesting about the whole thing is just the position that he was in at Stadia. And obviously I didn't know the exact nuance of it about where he sits, but I can't think of a single example of a game that could be popular on Twitch that wouldn't drive more sales. Like people would want to watch it, but they wouldn't want to play it themselves. Like unless it's some incredibly scary horror game that looks so frightening to play, but so entertaining to watch. I just can't think of an example. Surely if it's going to get big viewership on platforms like Twitch, it's going to be free advertising for the game, making more of the viewers want to buy it and play it with their friends.
Yeah, I think the one example I can think of that would kind of credit this opinion is there have been some cases where maybe you have a streamer who's playing a game that you really don't want them representing that game. I think, now I don't remember the exact details, but I'm pretty sure PewDiePie got banned from streaming a certain game in the past by a developer.
I remember that as well, yeah.
Yeah, rings, and that's like, that's an example of, you could see, you know, if you have some super toxic streamer who is just kind of ruining a game for someone who's streaming your game, then as a dev, you might want to not let that person have the right to stream your game. I totally get that. But that's probably the very small niche case and not the overwhelming majority case. So as long as you have a path to address that, then I don't think you need to license people to stream your game generally.
Yeah, the other thing I was just thinking when you were mentioning that is maybe if games become so story driven that you could be revealing spoilers that could ruin the experience for people that haven't bought the game yet. But again, I think we're talking about a really, really niche area in the game. I think in general, it's going to be an incredibly beneficial thing for a popular streamer, especially to stream your games. But you know, maybe in a year's time, we're going to be having the same DMCA conversation, but talking about games instead. You just never really know. But I'd like to think that game developers are a little bit more switched on than the record
Yeah,
labels.
it's a bit more connected to Twitch than music is.
Yeah, exactly. What else do we have to talk about? I mean, there was a lot of new tech that came out this week. I don't know if you caught any of the new announcements. AMD released some new GPUs, and they just seem to be killing it on the CPU side of things. So now new GPUs came out. The only thing about those that I was really looking out for was to see if they'd made any improvements to their version of the encoder that you can use for streaming. But I haven't seen a great amount of detail for that. But maybe more relevant was a new camera from AVMedia, a new webcam, a new microphone from Shure, the company that makes the microphone that both of us are using, the SM7B. And Elgato acquired Epoch Cam, I think it's called, which is a way of being able to use your phone as your camera, wirelessly or wired, for your live streams. And that seems to have been really popular as well. So, did you manage to catch any of them? Any opinions on any of those pieces of tech?
Yeah, at Techtober, there's a lot of cool stuff coming out. I think probably the thing I'm most excited for is the AMD stuff. I mean, AMD masterpiece at this point, if they're delivering on what they kind of promised, if they're beating out the 3090, but then also on Intel side, we'll have to kind of see when stuff comes out. I think you're right. We didn't see a whole lot of tests specifically around creators and encoders and things like that. But yeah, it's definitely promising with kind of the price points they're at and the performance they're getting, even over Nvidia. So I'm excited for those.
I think that's it for me. If they have worked on their encoder at all, it's going to be absolutely huge for the live streaming space. Because right now, streamers, when they're building a computer, especially when they're on a single PC setup, really it makes sense to go Nvidia's way, just because you get the NVENC encoder, which just takes so much work off your CPU. It makes streaming or recording gameplay so much easier. So if AMD have improved their codec and continue to work with places like OBS, then that could be really, really exciting. But for now, until I've seen some of the results from that, for now I'm still probably recommending Nvidia GPUs, but it's a really exciting time. They've obviously absolutely smashed it with the CPU side of the market recently, as more and more people need to have multiple cores for encoding, making videos, rendering out graphics, all those kind of things. So hopefully they're switched on and they're focusing on the encoder side as well. But how about the AVMedia cam, the Elgato camera, or the Shure mic? Seen any of those?
Yeah, I've seen them. I mean, I just got this new camera, so I'm not super looking into the new camera, but it does look cool. I think that seems like the best reviewed webcam I've seen from anybody, from some of the reviews I was watching. I don't know if you've had a chance to try it out yet, but I've heard very good things.
I haven't tried it out. It's one of those things, isn't it, where you're starting to see the fringe between webcam and camera now. It was always kind of webcams were cheap and cameras were expensive, and you paid for the quality that you got with a real camera and using a capture card. But now you're getting some expensive webcams that you know, are trying to rival those lower priced real cameras with a capture card. So I definitely want to get my hands on it and test it out a bit, as I do with the Elgato camera, because I think Elgato do this amazing thing where they always think about the customer and what problems they want to solve. And new streamers, they probably don't have the budget to be able to buy all these things straight away. And if you can use your phone camera, and you know they're pretty impressive cameras now that are in phones, and wirelessly just use that as your webcam for while streaming, I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think accessibility is super nice. There's a lot of cool ways you can hack that kind of thing. So I haven't tested out the Epoch Cam or seen too much on it. But yeah, if it's, I mean, like you said, phone cameras are good. So as long as you have a way to connect to that, then it could really improve your stream quality over just your basic built-in webcam or that kind of thing. I don't know if it works for console too, but that would be huge as well. Yeah, all that stuff is great as well. And I think the other thing you mentioned was the mic, the Shure mic, which I think is super cool. Again, I feel bad because I literally just bought this one like a month or two ago, and then they announced the new streamer version of it. I liked some of the features of it. I don't think I'm personally going to pick it up, but it's a nice kind of, like you mentioned, a stepping ground between like the lower USB mics and then some of the higher end XLRs. That's not quite such an investment as the full SM7B. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think, again, it's really interesting. I haven't been able to test it. I did reach out to them like when they first did their something's coming in 14 days. But clearly my email to them wasn't impressive enough, or maybe it's because I'm based in the UK. I'm not sure. Definitely going to get my hands on it. I think for me, again, I completely agree. It's trying to blend that USB mic and XLR mic. And it does have both options, which is really cool. And I think you could do some really cool things with that. If you're in a dual streaming setup, you could potentially USB connect to one computer and XLR connect to the other. And then, you know, you don't have to deal with the whole minefield of trying to make sure your teammates can hear you on Discord, but your stream can still hear you. And, you know, like having the sound go to both computers, which is why the Go XLR has been so popular, because it basically simplified a lot of that process. So yeah, I appreciate Shure seeing the market. I think that's the biggest interest from me, is legitimate microphone brands now are realizing that there's a big market in podcasting and in streaming and trying to develop products for that. And yeah, I made a video probably about 6 months ago now, where I looked at the most popular microphones used by the top 250 streamers on Twitch, and I painstakingly went through one at a time each stream to try and get a peep at their microphone in their webcam picture. And the Shure SM7B was used by nearly 50% of streamers. So it's a really, really popular microphone. And I do think that maybe it's unjust in some ways, because people just buy what they see people using. So, you know, this top streamer uses it, I must use it. Or Joe Rogan uses it on his podcast, I must use it on my podcast type thing. But it's just nice for Shure to then take results from that and say, you know, there's a market for this, and maybe we can develop a better product or a cheaper product that would serve the audience just as well. So I think it's really interesting. But yeah, like you said, Techtober, it's all of this lead up to Christmas, isn't it? Where or Black Friday as well, where all the tech companies are releasing their final products to try and drive their profits for the last quarter of the year.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen a lot of new cameras, a lot of phones, all that kind of stuff. And just on that last point, I think it's cool that Shure is acknowledging the streaming space, because like you said, and like you researched, this is easily the most popular mic on Twitch. So it's cool to see their first official kind of streamer-focused product, and I hope that we do see more in the future too.
Yeah, I think the only way that the announcement could have gone better was if it was a better microphone for less money, which obviously they're not going to do. They're not going to kill their best-selling product by introducing something that's better at a lower price point. So yeah, it was a mixed reception, but I think that it's probably going to be fairly popular, but maybe for people that are looking for an upgrade and, you know, out of budget, is the Shure SM7B. Anyway, I think this was a really interesting conversation. We've covered quite a lot. There's obviously been a lot of news over the last couple of weeks. As this show goes onwards, we're going to be doing this weekly. So we're probably going to be able to dive a little bit deeper into a single topic, but we wanted to cover a wide range of everything that we've talked about in this episode. Thanks so much for coming on, Ben. Obviously, you'll be a weekly host with us now, so people will get very familiar with your voice. And we're recording the video as well. We're not quite sure what we're going to do with the video yet, whether that's just going to be used for social snippets, or if we're going to upload clips to a YouTube channel, or even full episodes to a YouTube channel. We're still trying to decide that, so maybe let us know over on Twitter. Ben, where can people reach out to get more about you?
Just on Twitch is Benjamin Green. On Twitter is the same thing, but with an underscore at the front. I'm working on that. Hopefully I'll get that cleaned up.
Go and follow _ Benjamin Green, because the more followers he gets, the more weight he has with Twitter to get the real username.
That's right.
So we won't have to do that any longer. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, guys. This will be weekly now. Promise no more 6 month breaks due to COVID. This is going to be the show from now on. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.